Good morning, all of you, and most welcome to this day. My name is Lars Heikensten, and I am chairman of the expert group of aid analysis. Let me, before going into the topic of the day, say a few words about the expert group. It's a government committee with a very open and independent mandate. So we are given the task of identifying and making studies in the area of foreign aid. And we can also take somewhat broader perspective and look at more global issues connected to development and so on, but primarily on the topic of Swedish foreign aid. And once we have defined the topics, we can also choose any author that we want. Then these authors, in turn, they are independent to write their reports as they want. So really what we do in the committee is checking the quality before the reports are being published. We have, in direct translation from Swedish, called this double independence. There's sort of two layers of independence here. The group in itself when it defines the topics, and the authors when they write the reports. Now to today's theme, Africa and foreign aid to Africa. We decided a few years ago that we wanted to try to do country evaluations. And it was quite natural, I think, to choose two African countries. Swedish foreign aid has been present in the African continent for a long time, and there are a lot of experience. There should be a lot of experience to gain from that. We also felt that it would be useful to do two studies at the same time and have them apply different methodologies, which would also open up, or which would open up not only for a discussion about substance, has the aid functioned as intended, has it been efficient and so on, but also what kind of methodology, what kind of approach should one take when analyzing these questions. It occurred to us when we thought about how to report back on these reports that we had a third study going on regional development in Africa, and we decided that it would make sense to have that report being presented at the same time. Combine these three reports to have a broader discussion about African developments and foreign aid. And the intention now is that these three reports will give us a good background for discussion on these topics, lessons to be learned, and evaluation methodology. We will end the day with a panel discussion where broader issues concerning foreign aid and the global agenda will also be touched upon. So with these brief words, with this brief introduction, I once again like to welcome you here today. I very much look forward to a fruitful day. Thank you once again for coming.
Okay, thank you, Lars, and good morning and very welcome to all of you. So I have the pleasure of moderating this first session that will deal with the country study of Uganda. And you know, we have 1 hour, and we will use the time roughly as follows. The author, Stein-Erik Kruse, who is a very experienced evaluator with a long experience of both evaluation and development cooperation in all parts of the world. He will start by presenting his study, which, as you will be aware of, has sort of an alternative approach to what a country evaluation could look like. That will be about 20 minutes. Then we have two eminent commentators, Robert-Jan Scheer from the Minister of Foreign Affairs in the Netherlands, and Elliot Stern, who is known from variety of contexts, notably professor at Bristol University and professor emeritus from Lancaster University, as well as the editor of the International Journal Evaluation. And then we will give the opportunity for you to also ask questions. And so the idea is that we'll have a discussion around this study that will involve all of us. So please, Stein-Erik.
Good morning, everybody. Exploring donorship, internal factors in Swedish aid to Uganda. What does that mean? The expert group for AIDS studies decided to commission a study of Swedish bilateral development cooperation to Uganda. Several country studies have tried to measure and assess the long-term aggregate impact of external support and end often up with presenting findings with weak empirical foundation. Long-term impact is most often only indirectly linked to donor performance, and consequently the learning for the donor is limited importance. EBA encourage the evaluators to think out of the box and present alternative and innovative models for doing a country evaluation. Hence the objectives of this study was agreed to be twofold. First, the development of a model for evaluating country-level donor performance, and secondly, the application of that model to Sweden's development cooperation with Uganda. The overall purpose was to provide tools and guidance on how to make Swedish aid more effective if managed and delivered differently. This is not a complete country program evaluation, but more of a model-building exercise combined with an explorative study of how internal factors has influenced aid effectiveness in Uganda. What we set out to do was argue why internal factors are important and present an analytical model. Secondly, to identify the internal factors and try to formulate a set of initial assumptions or hypotheses to stimulate and organize the analysis. Thirdly, to discuss the relevance of the hypothesis. And finally, to draw some preliminary conclusions and present some emerging challenges. There was actually a chapter which I wanted to write, but I didn't. It should have been called The Gift or The Art of Giving. This is what interests me. How does donor behavior and the formal and informal interaction influence between the donor and the recipient influence the achievement of results? What does it mean to be a good donor? My original intention was to look at Marcel Mauss's essay about giving and, for instance, Bertolt Brecht's performance, The Good Person in Sichuan. Maybe the report would have been more interesting. In this presentation, I will give you just a small taste of that chapter by presenting a few stanzas from Håvamål, one of the old poems of the Scandinavian Edda, which I believe says it all in its old and old-fashioned way. And I quote, "I have never found a man so generous and so liberal in feeding his guests that to receive in return would not be disregarded to him. Those who exchange presents with one another remain friends the longest, if things turn out successfully. One must be a friend to one's friend and give present for present. One must have laughter for laughter and sorrow for lies. You know, if you have a friend in whom you have confidence, and if you wish to get good results, your soul must blend in with his, and you must exchange presents and frequently pay him visits. But if you have another person whom you mistrust, and if you wish to get good results, you must speak fine words to him, but your thought must be false, and you must lament in lies. This is the way with him in whom you have no trust and whose sentiments you suspect. You must smile at him and speak in spite of yourself. Presents given in return must be similar to those received. It is better not to beg than to sacrifice too much. A present given always expects one in return. It is better not to bring any offering than to spend too much on it. I will not do any interpretation of that poem, but you can read it later. It matters to aid effectiveness how aid is provided. This is a basic premise for the study. There is, of course, a broad range of external determining factors, but aid effectiveness rests also on the nature of recipient-donor relationships, efficient delivery procedures and mechanisms, as well as on the progress of building capacity and institutions. There are so far few studies bringing insight to how aid works on the ground by looking into the often complex causality chain linking external aid to final development outcomes. The causal links often end up as black boxes. The internal factors are contributory, not immediate causal factors determining aid effectiveness. In most cases, they play an indirect role and maybe limited role. It is not possible to prove and measure precisely their relative importance for aid effectiveness, even if we believe they play a role. What we do in the report is arguing for why they play a role through an analysis of relevant literature and evidence from Uganda. Swedish bilateral support to Uganda, or an explicit country perspective, is the entry point for the study. Hence, our black box contains mainly strategy and program processes and products. There are also other black boxes in the interaction between the embassy, MFA, and CEDA, but they were not opened or covered in this study. There are at least two reasons for the focus on internal factors influencing aid effectiveness. Firstly, such factors can be influenced and changed by the donor country, Sweden, and contribute to better collective decision-making and improved aid effectiveness. Secondly, empirical studies on this aspect of aid effectiveness are still in its infancy. There is much less systematic analysis and knowledge about those factors, despite significant tacit assumptions and knowledge among aid policymakers, aid practitioners, and evaluators. Opening up the black box means to identify what factors on the donor side that has shaped how the interaction with the recipient took place. Secondly, how these factors have influenced decisions about the objectives, design and implementation of concrete projects, and how development outcomes have been measured and analyzed, and what actions have been taken to enhance effectiveness. The three phases and internal processes to be assessed were the policy and program development phase, in which thematic and sector priorities are defined, the agenda and the selection of partners happen, all important prerequisites and conditions for performance. Secondly, the processes in aid management and implementation, influencing program and project development through negotiation, strategic support, appraisals, and established systems for planning and implementation. And finally, the learning and feedback loops through reviews and evaluations. What we did was to formulate a set of hypotheses covering the three phases, primarily to structure and facilitate the analysis. There were assumptions, expectations about what to find based on our own experience, the research literature, and review of documents from Uganda. The hypotheses were not used for some sort of formal or statistical testing, but to identify, open up, and explore relevant internal factors. Some examples of the hypothesis were, for example, the formulation of the country strategy was primarily driven by Swedish aid policy and strategy rather than Uganda's own priorities and a systematic assessment of the needs of the poor. The strategy has mainly served to legitimize rather than to reorient practice. There has been a development towards more off-budget project aid and less on-budget program sector support, more controlled donor involvement, and less national ownership and alignment. Embassy staff spends more time managing funds, meeting internal bureaucratic requirements, than in strategic discussion with partners, creating and maintaining relationship up, down, and across the aid chain. There is a weak direct feedback from users and direct beneficiaries of aid for modifying practices. Results-based management has crowded out intangible results. There is insufficient data and information on outcomes and impact of strategic objectives, making it difficult to make informed strategic decisions. What I will do now is just to present some selected findings from some of the hypotheses, and then you will have to read the report to get the rest. First, on the strategy, it is of course legitimate for a donor such as Sweden to define strategic entry values at the highest political level guiding the development cooperation with Uganda, and as such go through an internal strategy process. However, we found it pertinent to discuss how the strategy development process could be more bottom-up or country-owned when it comes to the substance of a results strategy, defining measurable objectives and targets. What does country ownership mean for a country strategy process and product? There seems to be a need for a more active involvement of and consultation with country partners and other donors. It would also be important to discuss what does a good country strategy look like, and find an appropriate balance between clear direction and flexible adaptation. The strategic objectives in the current results strategy for Uganda provide broad guidance, but are extremely complex and ambitious, given the relatively modest level of resources available, average of 308 million Swedish crown per year, and the limited selection of partners, mostly civil society and private sector entities. The relatively small contribution may have large catalytic effects, but such effects are so far not measured or well documented. The long-term research cooperation with Makerere University is an example of a successful long-term capacity building project, while several other projects have a short time span. The current results strategy with indicators and targets at national and thematic levels is not optimal and lead often to underreporting of actual results. The results are mostly found at the level of project and programs. The Swedish results strategy is to some extent based on the assumptions that all interventions contribute to the achievement of a few strategic objectives, and that project data can be collected and used for measuring aggregate results at sector and national level. This is questionable for two reasons. The objectives for each project cover a broad spectrum of activities. It can also be argued that the country portfolio is more a collection of interventions clustered under a set of strategic objectives than a coherent country program. The strategy has primarily served to legitimize rather than to reorient practice. The real planning has happened at project and program level. Program and projects precede the strategy and remain relatively unaffected by the strategy. The annual reports from the embassy to SIDA and MFA in Stockholm are based on the results strategy, and achievements are assessed against macro indicators. As such, the results and achievements are modest, seen from a national and thematic sector perspective. There is considerable evidence of short and long-term results from evaluations and of individual programs and projects. the current results framework is guiding and to some extent limited by a macro level format. The results framework is not in line with program realities and how the embassy works on the ground. An alternative approach, and it could be a more inductive approach, starting in the concrete interventions and trying to trace indirect and direct macro effects of Swedish contributions, which may provide more data and information both on the macro and macro level. The guidelines and the strategy are based on the Paris Declaration principles. The Swedish government supports country-owned policies and practices, but has also deliberately decided to avoid government channels because of corruption and human rights violations. Civil society and private sector organizations are prioritized as contractual and implementing partners. This is justified as a short-term arrangement and is also in line with what most other donors do, and arguing that country ownership is secured through civil society and private sector involvement. The question is to what extent it is sustainable for a bilateral donor as CEDA, because it affects level of government ownership and the ability to achieve broader long-term objectives, despite the obvious value of strengthening ownership and participation of civil society and private sectors. All the programs and projects in the Swedish portfolio is currently managed and funded outside government channels, in cash to recipient country institutions. There is a need for a systematic assessment of current practice and discussion of future options for channeling Swedish aid. The share of funding to civil society is expected to rise to 77% into 2018, while private sector will absorb 12%, multilateral 8%, and public sector entities only 3%. Civil society and private sector are significant actors in Uganda, but are expected to create sustainable and effective results on the ground and in areas of democratic governments and human rights. Are there any negative effects in the massive increase of such support? Is it realistic to reach the goals and objectives in the current strategy with no or minimal cooperation with the government? The question in terms of managing fund versus nurturing relationship is to what extent donor staff increasingly has to spend a large amount of time meeting internal bureaucratic requirements as to compare to creating and nurturing relationships up, down, and across the aid chains. This is an important issue that requires further investigation. Even if donor staff are committed to downward accountability, networking, participation, and empowerment, administrative and financial issues may increasingly absorb their time and capacity. Such developments are found in studies in modern bureaucracies in Western Europe, reducing the quality and quantity of strategic and technical interaction with external partners, and it would not be any surprise if the same development were found in donor agencies. The remit of embassy decision-making and operational independence should also be reviewed based on the possible decreasing level of power among embassies, restricting staff to administer policy flexibly and creatively, and willingness to accept risks. It could be argued that the political situation in Uganda presents already the embassy at the outset with a high level of risk and requires acceptance of risk from all donors. But the consequences of widespread corruption, critical audits, and other constraints are not well known. Future studies should try to assess donor behavior in more detail and discuss how it is affected by experiences in the donor country, combined with weaker autonomy for the aid system within Swedish development cooperation. There is also a continuous need to monitor the implication of results-based management practices. There is no evidence as far as we have found, that more complex interventions have been crowded out for tangible service delivery projects. The strategy has an explicit rights orientation focusing on human rights, democratic governments, and gender equality, all requiring an acknowledgement and understanding of complex multiple causes and effects. This is better taken into the account in the individual interventions than in the results strategy. The embassy is to some extent placed in the tension between the rights and the results agenda, on the rights agenda or, and the, on both sides, and tries to manage that tension. Rights-based work as well as services create results, but the results are often different and should be measured differently with qualitative and quantitative methods. Just a quick preliminary conclusion. The internal factors are, as I said, contributory, not immediate causal factors determining aid effectiveness. In most cases, they play an indirect role. It is not possible to prove and measure precisely their relative importance. Results are often much more influenced by the characteristics of implementation than the plans and objectives. The internal factors are not unique to Uganda, but are generic variables. As such, the same model and approach could be used in other countries as well, if the relative importance of each factor may vary. Future studies should broaden the perspective, include additional internal factors, and cover the entire Swedish aid system, beyond the individual embassy and the recipient country. In other words, to look at all systems and subsystems between the embassy and SIDA MFA. The division of responsibilities between MFA and SIDA is, for instance, only mentioned briefly in this report. Future studies will also have to look carefully and systematically at interactions with implementing partners, since most of the internal factors are also relational. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Jane Erik. Well, that's really a handful, isn't it? So I think, well, there are at least three strands of issues that could be commented on. I mean, that we could ask ourselves, is your approach useful to understand Swedish contribution to development in Uganda? And what are the issues related to aid effectiveness and the role of the internal factors? And thirdly, what lessons can we draw for the continued work of EBA if we want to do other country studies? Well, these are my own questions. I'm sure that the commentators have their own take on this study.